Amen. Bless the Lord. For the sake of illustration, a young Hindu convert felt led to go to India as a missionary. Brother mentioned the Buddhist, and he is in this story. Late one afternoon, this young missionary was traveling through the foothills of the Himalaya mountains with the Buddhist monk. And as they were going along, it was bitterly cold, more so than Kentucky, of course. And the wind was sharp, and there was some snow, and they were going along, and night was fast approaching. And the monk looked at the missionary, and he said, "We must get to the monastery before dark, because we'll freeze to death." And as they were walking along, they came past a steep place, a cliff, and they heard something down there. They heard someone, actually. And the missionary stopped and he looked down and he saw there a man that was badly hurt. He was crying for help down below the cliff. And the missionary said, "I must help this man." The monk said, "No, he has fallen to his fate. We must keep going or we too will die." And with that, he took off for the monastery, but the missionary went down over that cliff. He scampered down there, he got to the bottom, and he used what he had with him. I don't know if he used his coat, whatever he had. He made some kind of a sling, and he gathered this man up, got him on his back, and he scampered, struggled back up to the path. By the time he got there, it was almost dark. But he managed to see his way, find his way, and as he went along, suddenly the lights of the monastery were up ahead. He's going to make it. And he's trudging with this man on his back. And then, for the very first time, he stumbled onto something and nearly fell. He stopped, backed up, and he brushed the snow away, and it was the body of the monk frozen to death. My subject today is moved with compassion, and I accent the word moved because it's compassion. We're going to be looking at it as an action word today. My question is, has compassion become a life-changing experience for you? The reason I ask, I bring Isaiah 38, verse 17 here. "Behold, for peace I had great bitterness, but thou hast in love to my soul delivered it from the pit of corruption. For thou hast cast all my sins behind thy back." That's compassion. I ask, have you experienced that? Is it real to you? Compassion, how did it work? I'm taking this back to Israel right now. We were there on Palm Sunday, over there on the Mount of Olives. There's a little path comes down, and I don't know if it's the exact one where the colt went that day with the master on its back, but maybe it was. It was somewhere there at least. And we were there with thousands of other tourists. You know, Easter brings more people Easter brings more people to Israel than any other occasion, we are told. And so there's thousands of people there, and they're from all over the world. And we go over, and we're kind of being typical tourists. We join the group to make that descent down that little trail toward Jerusalem. And as we're coming down, we come to a place overlooking the city. It's known as the place of weeping. Maybe it was the place where Jesus stopped, and he looked at the city, and he cried. And he said, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou that killest the prophets, if you would have known only in this thy day the things that belong to thy peace, but now they're withhold." And it was the compassionate heart of Jesus there. And as we came down to that place, I asked my team, there were a few of us together there, and I said to them, "If Jesus were here today, I wonder what he would say, and I wonder what he would do." And right at that moment, I felt a couple drops of water. And I said, "It's raining." It was under a blue sky, just a few drops. And I said, "Do tears. If Jesus were here today, he'd still cry. If Jesus were here this morning, would he still cry? A year later, we're over in Israel, we're working there again. And once again, Palm Sunday, we happened to be over that time. We went back to the Mount of Olives and we were coming down with that procession, but I was to preach that evening and so I needed to get home. You know how it is. You kind of have to go get ready for the evening. And I had my team with me. There were probably five of us together there and they will verify this. We're coming down and it was one of the warmest days of the season so far. People had umbrellas, they were wearing hats and so the sun was beating down. And we came down to that place and as we walked there, once again, I couldn't help but think, if Jesus were here today, I wonder what he would say. I wonder what he would do. And at that moment, I said, it's raining. There were about 12 drops of rain. I tend to feel them a little quicker than some others. And I said, there's a few drops of rain. And it was all over with under a clear sky. And I said, the message would be the same. He would cry. Compassion. Compassion is born in the heart, but it finds expression in our hands and in our feet. We were working in Greece, working with the refugees there on Lesbos Island from Camp Moria. Conditions were terrible. There were like 20,000 people in an area that the camp itself had room for between 2,000 and 3,000 people. The rest were in the bush. And conditions were so bad that there was sewage, there was trash, there were rats, there was mud, there was suffering, there was crime. And we would go out and attempt to minister to those people. After we came back, someone sent a message, one of our dear friends there, and they said, we can't take it anymore. It's terrible here. And they said we were together with some friends and just wondering what they could do. They were crying out to the Lord for help. And they saw a hand. She sent me this picture. This lady sent us this. She said a hand appeared. They saw it. It was a cloud. And they knew that it was going to be okay. God was there with them. It's a sign of compassion. And so the movements of compassion, the hand of compassion, let's say, the arm of compassion, finds expression in a number of various ways. We're going to find it in courage, vision, sensitivity, purpose, caring, creativity, and in resources. These are some of the things that we're going to be looking at today, and we're going to circle around. You don't have to write them all down now because they're going to come back. And I'd like to just, right here at this junction, make a little disclaimer. Once again, what you're going to be seeing from here forward for the sake of illustration and examples of what compassion looks like and how it works does involve my wife and I. We're going to give you these illustrations only for the glory of God. You know, we were there, it was hands-on for us, and one of the better ways to illustrate that is to simply see what it looks like. So please understand me in that. So Jesus' example, I thought the brother was going to take all of my wind out of my sail, but he didn't. He mentioned this, and I'm going to go back and recap because there are several points in this example here that we want to highlight. Jesus' example in Mark 1, 40 through 42. And there came a leper to him, beseeching him, and kneeling down and saying, if thou wilt, thou canst make me clean. And Jesus, of course, did that. But what was the motivation? And Jesus, moved with compassion. Jesus was moved with compassion. And what happened next? He put forth a hand. He put forth his hand, number one. Number two, he touched him. And number three, he spoke to him. And as soon as he had spoken, immediately the leprosy departed from him and he was cleansed. Very, very important components, and we're going to come back and draw a few more points from this as we go along. But compassion was Jesus' drawing element. There was something about Jesus that was magnetic. It brought the crowds to him. It's that thing that caused the leper to cry out for help. It's that thing that caused blind Bartimaeus to cry out for help. I think it was the motivation for Zacchaeus to get in that tree. Compassion. There was something that was drawing these people in. Legion and others. The list goes on. People don't care about how much you know until they know how much you care. So compassion, let's just define it a little bit. The feeling of deep sympathy and sorrow for another who is stricken by misfortune, accompanied by a strong desire to alleviate suffering. So we're working in Fredonia, Kentucky, not so far from here. The tornado had gone through there, came from Arkansas and swept up through there and headed up toward Indiana, you know. We're working there as chaplain, attempting to, yes, reach out with compassion to people that really, really suffered. And we hear this story about this couple, a man and his wife. They heard that the tornado was coming. They were a young couple, they had a little baby. I don't remember how old, but very small. And the baby was upstairs, if I have the story right, was sleeping. And they knew they had to do something. And the wife ran upstairs to get the baby. She came downstairs and together they made their way toward the basement. The man was going first, his wife was coming behind him. And as they went the stairs, at that point, the roof of the house blew off completely, and there was such a vacuum from the tornado that it took that little baby right out of mom's arms, and it blew away. At the time when we were there, and even weeks following, the baby was not found. Suffering. Can you imagine this couple and what they were going through? And I'm going to be the first to say that I don't really understand very well what all compassion should look like in a case like that. But we did attempt to minister to these people. Compassion is to touch a broken world with the love and healing touch of Jesus. We're in Haiti now. Judette, a young girl, up and coming, about 20 years old, studying to be a pharmacist. And there's the earthquake in Port-au-Prince. You remember about that. A lot of buildings collapsed and so on. And she was seriously hurt. Here she is. She has one arm amputated. She has a leg amputated right up at the top. She has head injuries. She has bruises on her other leg. And not only that, but she was having convulsions. It was a pitiful situation, and you notice right on the other side of the bed, that's her mother standing there. Now, the part that was significant here in this story is that these people were from a very dark area in Haiti, and when I say dark, I'm talking about voodooism. You understand? It was very, very dark, and we came to these people, and we attempted to reach out to them. But there was a wall, there was a shell there, a hard shell. And it was just like there was no response. But we came back and we attempted to just reach out to and love this girl and minister to her. And after a while that began to change. I'm going to fast forward in the story now. The time came when both she and her mother requested a Bible. They wanted nothing to do with people like us to begin with. The time came a little bit later. We went to see this girl before we left Haiti to see how they were doing. We'd taken a wheelchair in for her, and her mother was there. We became friends with them. And when we were ready to leave Haiti there, I said, we need to go back and see Judette one more time. We went to the hospital, and there she was. They had her on a bed, and the therapist was there doing some therapy. And she was laying face down, and I went over and just got right down on my knees there in front, and she pushed herself up a little bit, and on her face was a smile. It was, it just, it could break your heart. And I wanted to talk to her a little bit there, but then I saw I was interfering with what was going on. I apologized to the therapist. I said, we'll come back after she's finished. Okay, and so we left. We went outside and went across the street to where there was some other therapy going on. And as we were there ministering to another girl, and her picture's coming up here somewhere, I think, we were there ministering to her, and I heard this hopping sound. And I was trying to figure out, because it was coming from behind, I didn't know what it was. And I glanced back just a little bit, and I saw a little girl this big, and she was coming, and I noticed that she had a crutch. But I didn't notice what all was going on until she came past us with a doctor, and then I understood. On one side, she was missing an arm. On the other side, she was missing a leg. And so she was using a crutch with the arm that she had, and she was hopping with the leg that she had. Well, we went back. I could just spend time there, but so we went back in to talk to Judette one more time. Now she's sitting in a wheelchair, and she's at her bed. We come there, and she smiles, and we begin to talk to her, and I said, how am I gonna do this? Somehow, we need to tell her that we're going back to America. And I did. I spoke to her, and she began to just sob. And as she got her composure, she looked up at me and she said, you're going back to America, but what do I have? We're going to Iraq now, but whoso hath this world's good seeth his brother of need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him. This is Bible. We come into a tent, and here is this young boy. I don't have my pointer here. You'll notice right here. He's wearing a white plastic bag. Handicapped boy. And we begin to get his story from the parents there. And they said, we have nothing. We're not able to buy diapers. And this, our son, the best we can do is to strip him into a plastic bag. Tore my heart out. I said, something has to be done. We left there, we went out. And outside the camp, we were able to find diapers. And I came back with my hands full of diapers, and I said, son, tonight you're sleeping dry. Friends, these people just get right into your heart, and if some have compassion, making a difference. Jesus' example, let's go back to the example that we just looked at here. It says there in Mark that Jesus reached out his hand and he touched this man. If I understand that right, Jesus didn't just go up and just stay away from him, but touch him. You know, this is one of the more significant miracles that Jesus did. Leprosy was a terrible thing. There was no cure for it. It was contagious. And a person that had leprosy was to be crying out, unclean, stay away from me. Don't come close. And Jesus went up. And he actually, I believe he fastened his hand on that man. That's significant. So we're in the West Bank. We go out to see this couple, a man and his wife. We get into their home. And she, the wife, comes out and she's sad. She's crying. She's telling us the story. She says, my husband is sick. We look inside the door, and there he was on the floor over against the wall under a blanket, just a bump on the floor. He's not well. And just outside the door, they had three older handicapped children, severely handicapped children, actually. And she said, my son was convulsing during the night, and he was laying there on the concrete, was wet from where he was drooling. It was a pitiful situation. She said, my son was screaming all night, and I couldn't sleep, and my husband is sick. He's not well at all. And there she was, and my wife went up to her and attempted to put her arm around this lady, and as she did, this lady just moved away, like don't. And it didn't take very long. If you know my wife, you know she's a little magnetic too. But she kept on. She ministered to this lady, and after a while, she had her arm around her. Now, she hadn't been close to a shower in a long time. Things were not well there at all. But she had her arm around this lady, and she began to warm up, and they began to communicate. You see, compassion took the form of love here. Jesus countered culture to exemplify a greater purpose, and the culture was, of course, to stay away from a man that was a leper. Jesus countered that. The other thing that's significant is that Jesus made it possible for this man to take the next step. Jesus could have probably done more for this leper. But he said, go show yourself to the priest and do the things that are necessary for your cleansing. He made it possible for the man to take the next step. This is very important in ministry, to make it possible for they to take the next step. Jesus entered the leprous man's story regardless of what others thought or did. We're in Bangladesh. We're in the hospital after the Rana Plaza collapsed and there were a lot of amputees. And we come up to this bed, this young girl, she's there. I can tell she's very young. And we begin to minister to her and she wouldn't talk. She was just staring hopelessly around, and we sat down by her bed, and if I remember correctly, I even took my leg off, I think, and we were talking, and I was attempting to just help her understand that, yes, you've been badly hurt, but there'll be another day. Life will go on. You know, I don't remember what all there. And as we and I asked about her family. And by the way, that's a great cultural thing to do, is to just ask about the family. Who are your parents? You have siblings and so forth. And she didn't want to talk about it very much. And I asked her age, and she said, "I'm 18." And in my mind, I said, "No, that's not right." But as we walked away from her bed, this is my point. We walked away from her bed, and behind me, I heard her cry. She laid herself back on her bed and was laying there sobbing. And this is what I heard. There were people in the hospital, came walking by, and I heard them say, "Don't pay attention to her. She's crazy. She's just crying because, you know, she's got big problems, and just leave her alone." I couldn't stand it. But we went back. Luke 7, verse 13. "And when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her, and he said to her, 'Don't weep. Weep not.'" Compassion. I need to finish that story, though. We came back at a later time, and we kept on. You know, we kind of kept on showing compassion. So we came back and took an interest in her. And after a while, she began to talk. She talked about her family and so on. And then as she was talking about her siblings and her ages, and then she said, "And I'm 18, and I'm 13. I said, "I thought so." The reason she said she was 18 is because she was working at the garment factory, and you have to be 18 to work at the garment factory. And I was wondering why these young ladies, as we went from one bed to the other, and we were attempting to minister, you know, and I would ask their age, they say they're 18. They were either 18 or older. And that's because you need to be 18. All right, so we looked at the example of Christ. Let's look at the involvement of his followers. "And Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom and healing every sickness and every disease among the people. But when he saw the multitudes," he saw them. Remember, vision, visionary. He saw them. "He was moved with compassion on them." Why? "Because they fainted. They were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherd. Then saith he unto his disciples, the harvest truly is plenteous, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest that he will send forth laborers into his harvest. Oh, I appreciate what's on the wall over here. And it's my heart that somehow out of this group right here, there will be laborers that will go forth into the harvest here and abroad in other places. Pray the Lord of the harvest, yes, that he would send others, the person beside you, but perhaps rather pray that the Lord will prepare you. Prepare you, myself, my heart, to be effective in the harvest. What we are is what God has to work with. We need his help, don't we? And then Jesus in Luke 10, 1 through 4, after these things, the Lord appointed other 70 also. And he sent them two and two before his face into every city and place whither he himself would come. Therefore said he unto them, the harvest truly is great, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord. And by the way, remember and don't ever forget that Jesus is the Lord of the harvest. Pray ye the Lord of the harvest, that he would send forth laborers into that harvest. Go your ways. Behold, I send you forth as lambs among wolves. Now that sounds a little precarious. Carry neither purse nor scrip nor shoes, and salute no man by the way. Our assignment out of here, I'm going to just give us a few things to think about. That assignment is a dutiful assignment. Jesus said, I want to send you where I would come. Is it conceivable to say that Jesus, like John the Baptist, was sent to prepare the way of the Lord? Jesus would come to those people in the hospital in Shavar. Jesus would come to the man at the feed mill here in Kentucky. Jesus would come to the world. He is sending you where he himself would come, to bare his face, to prepare the way, to sow the seed. Yes, it's a dutiful call. It's hard work. Jesus said the laborers are few, the task is great. That's easy to see here. He said the task is going to be dangerous, lambs among wolves. You know what? The devil, as a roaring lion, is about seeking whom he may devour. Yes, he is. And lambs among wolves are lion feed. The call is for us to be involved, to take the lambs back before Satan gets them. He's a roaring lion. And then there's sacrifice involved. That's kind of the understood here. But there's also a joyous element. The 70 came back and they said, Lord, great things happened. The spirits were subject to us and many good things happened, Jesus said. He didn't really say this, but the implication is that's all good. That's what I sent you for. But rejoice rather that your names are written in heaven. That speaks of faithfulness in the work, does it not? I noticed with interest that there were 70 sent. And how many came back? 70 came back. That's important. Because you know what? There are things involved in ministries abroad that can take young people the wrong way. There were 70 that went. There are 70 that returned. But the Lord of the harvest needs to prepare us and outfit us for the task. All right, we're going to look at these points, and I'm going to page through. So courage, compassion, the movement, a movement of compassion is courage. We're in Haiti now. So you walk with your friend and you're going past. And as we go, there's the smell of death that's there. And a young person might stop and they say, family. There's a family underneath there. There was a group of people. There were maybe a number of families that are in between those layers of concrete. Or the ones that escape, they get away, they end up in a place like this. And so we go out there. And on top of the earthquake, on top of all that happened there, there was an outbreak of cholera with the heat and everything that's there. People dehydrating and dying. They end up in camps like these, and there's no good facilities there. The next one is vision. Courage, and then vision. This is a picture of our camp in Ganul, in the northwest frontier province of Pakistan. There we are. We have a little camp set up just to the right of this picture here, down in here somewhere, I think maybe right here. We would walk through there on our way to fill our water bottles at a spring down at the river, and you would find telltale signs of school, maybe a few sandals or a backpack or something there. The earthquake came and that building collapsed, and I think there were 40 boys, young boys, that were killed there. They died there. Teacher managed to escape out from under some layers of concrete. But vision, and so we go there. Where do you start? 200,000 people dead. Big rain had come and filled the faults of these mountains that had opened up with a 7.6 earthquake in the foothills of the Himalaya Mountains. And then the rain came, filled those cracks, and sides of the mountains slid down and buried entire villages and houses and so on. Where do we start? The people were so low. It's just like there's nothing. There's nothing here. And we go there. The first team went there with a wheelbarrow and a little one burner hot plate to fry their eggs and maybe a skillet. I don't know, a few things in a tent. And that is where that vision started. The work started there. And here's what it looked like. The focus was to minister to the orphans, to the widow, to the poorest of the poor. Compassion, hope for the handicapped in the West Bank. We're talking about vision here. Here's a man that had a disease. The lack of blood flow to the extremities. It was almost like leprosy. And he had lost both legs, and he's wearing a glove on his one hand because he didn't want anybody to see it. It was turning purple. The odds are that he's probably going to lose those parts. Caring. Elements of love, mercy, and tenderness, acceptance, and self-worth are extremely powerful, especially in an Islamic mindset. Here's an example. We go to a hospital. We're back in Iraq during the ISIS war in 2017. With terrible things were happening there. We go to a children's hospital, and this couple is there. This is the mother. Her husband was there, too, and behind her down here on the bed is the youngest, I think, of three children. She had gotten a gunshot wound, and her husband was wounded, and she is there telling my wife the story. She said ISIS was shooting at them, and they ran for their lives. And as they went, two children, just older than the one you see laying on the bed there, were shot and killed. She said, we couldn't even look back. We just ran for our lives to escape. This is what they had left. And to reach out and to minister to people that, this was about 2 days after. Everything was still really fresh, caring. Here's a widow in Pakistan, and I'm not going to take time to tell her story. Hope for the handicapped. Our work was wheelchairs and paraphernalia that would help handicapped people and so on. We came to this home. This little girl didn't need a wheelchair. She needed something else. When she was born, she was blind, she was deaf, and she was mute. The doctor said she's not going to live anyway, and they left her go. But she did. I'd love to tell you more of her story. Compassion. Now we're back in Bangladesh. Personal friend of ours, this young lady, newly married, they didn't have any children yet, lost both her legs, tremendous suffering. I spoke with her husband, he was there. And I said to him, I know your wife, she's been injured, she's been severely injured. But I say to him, you promised you would take care of your wife, didn't you? Yes. I said, don't ever, ever, ever leave your wife. It was happening over there. You know, these ladies got injured, and the men, sometimes they'd say, well, Islam allows for this. Why should I care for my injured wife? She's lost her arm or her leg or both or something like that. I'll just leave her and go for another. Let's go to purpose. I'm going to have to go quickly, more quickly. So purpose, we're at the hospital. And one of the things that I just love to interact with these people with was God must have a purpose for you. Otherwise you'd be dead like the other people that were right around you there. And then we would talk to them about wrapping and shrinking and preparing for prosthesis for the best advantage of when life goes a step forward and so on. We talk about phantom pain and different things. It was so meaningful. Creativity. Let's continue to move on. We're back in Haiti. I don't have a prosthesis like this anymore where I wear a man's leg now. This one here looked different than that, but here we are, and we would go out with these to these places where these people, these men and women, were underneath a tent, and we would just minister to them, give them Bible story books, and talk about their condition and what can be done to make life better for them. Creativity. We go to a home. We're in the West Bank now, and we come into this home, and this young boy is strapped to a piece of plywood. Just this rigid, hard seat. There he is. He's there in the living room on the floor, and he's just there staring. Life is the way it is for him. And I got to thinking, creativity. It's probably one of my passions. And I thought, back, there's a warehouse somewhere. And I remember back there among the junk where the dust has collected and everything, I saw a contraption back there, and I think something could be done for this young man. And we went back there and confiscated that thing. I don't know, we probably paid a few shekels for it, brought it back, and I had to do things with and by the way, don't be afraid to be creative. Over there, I had to carry my shop with me. I had a backpack, had a battery drill, a couple of stove bolts, a hacksaw, and you know, some of those real basic things. And you need to improvise. One time we were working on something, and my pastor friend that was with me, his picture is coming up here, he was with me, and he said, "Where did you go to school?" I said, "No, this is just simple. This is common sense." So we're going out of Jerusalem, and I'm thinking, the old city, they pile the junk in the corners, you know, and they're waiting for the cart to come along and pick it up. And I see a solar collector that somebody had taken down. It's piled in the corner. There's got a bunch of plastic pipes there, and I pull out my Leatherman and I chop off some pieces of junk, put them in my backpack, because I'm going to need them to make bushings to mount a headrest onto a wheelchair. Okay. But anyway, so we come back and we bring this back, and you should have seen not only the joy in that home with the parents, but this little boy had $1 million smile, and on top of that, his brothers would take that little cart and they'd run around the house with that thing. Life was completely different for him. Creativity. We're now in Liberia. As we were there teaching, I thought I went to teach discipleship, and the other person that was teaching with us there, he said, "No, we've got some orthotics that need to take place here." I said, I know prosthetics, I don't know about orthotics. He said, "Well, let's go see." We go to see. By the way, this little girl, this young girl's name is Patience. I like that. And she was 16 years old, had polio as a young girl, and somebody gave her a set of braces. And by now, they were already used at that point. And by now, they're wore out. The hinge points on the side, where they're supposed to be like a quarter inch bolt, were maybe a 3/4 inch hole. And she had them wired together and taped together. And we went there. I said, "You know what? We can fix this thing. We can make it better." She didn't want to give it up. She was afraid we wouldn't bring it back. Oh, we finally convinced her, "You will get this thing back." We took it to the shop. You know, JB Weld, I'll have to leave that. But we've been a little creative now. And so we fixed these holes and re-drill. Oh, and one was shorter than the other. So we take some steel and we make that 1 foot a little bit longer than the other one. And then, of course, she had grown and it was too tight up in here. I said, "Well, maybe with the help of a heat gun, we can spread this thing." Anyways, here she is. I'm not advertising her clothing or anything like that, only to say that by the time that was all done, compassion had made a huge difference. Resources. Compassion involves resources. So here we are. delivering wheelchairs. And oh, I'd love to tell you the story. This is my translator. We're going out with a load of wheelchairs, and he tells the story of how he became converted. If I have time at the end here, I will come back to him. If I forget, you raise your hand and tell me to go back there. I will. Resources. Developing water springs in Afghanistan, way up in the north where the Taliban had gone in and oppressed villages and ran people out and used the bamboo in their houses for fry their eggs and that kind of thing. Compassion. Here, after the project is done, they would get together under the tree. They would sit there, and if you're old, you get to sit on a little stool, and I get to talk to these men. Now, I have to be careful because they're Muslim, but I speak to them about water. And I say, so this project was about water. Yes, water. I say, it's about good water, clean water. Water has to do with life. Yes, oh yes, yes. And so, okay, I go down that trail and I circle just as low as I can in hopes that they will connect the dots that yes, this project is about water. It's about water that flows from a tank, but it's about water that flows from other places. Yes, and it touches and changes lives. Of course, referring to Christ. All right, sensitivity. I do need to tell you this story. We're back in a small village near Hebron. We're talking sensitivity. And there where the Tomb of the Patriarchs is, near where Abraham is buried, and so one of those villages. And so we go out there and we find this family, 12 children. Out of those 12 children, 11 of them were handicapped. Some of them severely handicapped. And out of those 11, 9 had died. We visit this man. He's very tender. And he tells us his story. He takes us out behind his house. And there he has some stones laid up. A box with a partition in the middle. And he looks at us and he said, here I have laid my boys. And here I have laid my girls. And so we learn to know this, and somehow there's something connecting, okay? Sometime later, we're down in that village, and we have a healthcare person along, and she needs a ride back to Hebron, and so we have her in the van, and we're starting to leave the village. And then she gets a call and said, change of plans, so she got out of the vehicle, and we had a little bit of time on our hands. And I looked over across the hollow over there, and I saw this man's house. We had no plan to go there today. No plan. And we said, we'll go visit. And so we drive over, and the young girl that's handicapped, she's out on the porch outside because it's warmer out in the sun than it is inside. And she sees us coming, and she's bouncing up and down. Okay? So we go up, and they take us in. And the ladies sit on the floor, and three men sit on chairs. This man wasn't at home at the time, but the wife said, he's coming. And so we wait for just a few minutes, and there he comes in the door, you see, right behind his shoulder. He comes in, and we're facing him, and he sits on the floor. And here's what he said. I'm taking a shortcut here. But he said, I dreamt last night. I had a vision. And he said, in my vision, I saw you three men. I knew that you were coming to my house today. Now, the hair began to stand up on my arm. And what he said next even intensified that. He said, and in my vision, I saw you three men sitting in the order that you're sitting right here in my living room. We had no intention to go there. And you know what happened next? We asked him if we would be able or allowed to pray for him. Well, he said, absolutely. The man got down on the floor and we gathered around him. Now remember, these are Muslim people. We gathered around, laid our hands on him, and we prayed for him. And we sang some songs. And then we asked him if he would be interested in a holy book. And he said, well, yes, actually he would. I said, you know what? I just may have one in the trunk of the car. And sure enough, I had one in the trunk of the car. I had more of them there. And so we brought this book in. I gave it to him. He put it up to his to his mouth. He kissed it, put it on his forehead, and he said, in 3 days, I will read it from cover to cover. Just the fast forward of the story is that at the end, I saw my translator. He was sitting in the van. You saw him a bit ago. I saw he and this man sitting side by side on the floor, each of them with a Bible on their lap. And they are studying the Bible together. Compassion is powerful. It is so powerful. Sensitivity. There's the other girl I was talking about in Haiti. I have to leave that. I should quickly go on in the final moments that I have here, not very long. View your situation, and this is really important. We all have situations. View your situation in life as God's arrangement for your effectiveness in his kingdom. Don't ever forget that. And you don't need to be an amputee to do that. God allows things that we wonder why and what it could all mean. I just challenge you to do that. And of course, that involves, I'm almost done and I'm almost out of time. God prepares us if we ask him to. Pray ye the Lord of the harvest. And God may arrange something for you that may not be understood at the time, but it's preparing you for effectiveness in his kingdom. Finally, compassion. Do I care enough to ask? Do I care enough to pray? And do I care enough to volunteer and to get involved? God bless you.